الله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له له الحمد وله الملك يحيي ويميت وهو على كل شيء قدير ونشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله ونبيه وخليله اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه ومن تبعهم بإحسان ومنا معهم يا أرحم الراحمين أما بعد السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Inshallah, tonight we will continue the invasion of the barbarians, the Mongols, who started in the steppes of Mongolia, taking over most of the Muslim lands and subjugated all the cities on the way to destruction and killing of the ulama of this ummah, and they didn't make any difference between man and woman, child. As Ibn al-Athir said, this is more like the end of time, rahmatullah. Last week we talked about the fall of Baghdad, the center for al-Khilafah al-Abbasiyya for over 500 years, and the destruction of a city that was basically during that time with the center of knowledge, science, and of course the ulama of this ummah, and a huge library that contains 500 or hundreds of years of knowledge from the Muslim ummah. All were burned, destroyed, and 1 million populations were killed. Some political landscape will change with the fall of Baghdad, the end of the Khilafah. What we have seen, that Hulaku basically started to control all of Baghdad, and when he subjugated Erbil, and aware that this would please the Mongol, the rulers of Mosul, Badruddin, Lu'lu', appointed Armenian Christian to be a new governor for his area, and in Baghdad, the head of the Christian church, Makakul as they call him, he went to the house of the Khalifa and he took that on being the new power in Baghdad during that time. Whilst the Mongols massacred the Muslims, the Christian population of the city, as we said, were spared, and the Christian quarter were not harmed, and the Christians who found refuge in their church were basically protected. Some rich Muslim traders gave all their what they have, all their wealth, to the Christian, to basically in return to save their life, but they were all slaughtered after that. One of the Christian historians, Christian Dominican Ricardo de Monto Groco, said, when the Mongols arrived in Baghdad, where there were many Christians, Hulaku Khan ordered that no Mongol should enter the homes of the Christians to cause them any harm. But he kept on going. They should put to death all the Sarakans, the Muslims. 800,000 of them were killed. Arnold, another historian, told us they were brought out in batches for the city to be massacred, and the greater part of the city itself was destroyed by fire. Another historian said in February 1258, Al-Khalifa al-Mu'tasim, the last Khalifa of Bani al-Abbas, gave himself up, and Hulaku alayhi la'natullah ordered him to instruct the whole population to gather on the plain outside the walls. It's exactly what happened in Bukhara and Samarkand, Niasapur earlier in Asia. What did he do? Well, they were all slashed and hacked to death in heaps, regardless of their age or sex. The city was then systematically looted, destroyed, and burned. 800,000 persons are said to have been killed. For 500 years, Baghdad, as I said, had been a city of palaces, masajids, libraries and colleges, its universities and hospitals the most advanced in the world, now nothing remained but heaps of rubble and the stench of decaying human flesh. At the end of March, the stench of decaying, a lot of killings, a lot of massacres, almost a million. These corpses, of course, would put Hulako and his army to withdraw because they would fear on themselves or sickness. Many of them left with regret, believing that there were still objects of value to be found in the city. Al-Aqami al-Shi'i alayhi min Allah ma astahaq, because of what he actually did helping the Mongols against the Muslim Ummah, he was rewarded to be the new vizier. So he stayed in his position as vizier of Baghdad. They actually said that only a few weeks after that he died. Alayhi min Allah ma astahaq. Another collaborators with the Mongols, Ahmad ibn Amran, became the prefect of East Baghdad. Why? Because he was rewarded by Jenghis Khan for during the siege, and it was too cold. This is, we're talking about January, and we're talking about February, and you have snow in that part of the world. The Mongols started to run out of food. But what did Ahmad said as the name? When hunger got hold of the Mongols, he gave them the spot where large quantities of wheat were hidden in a secret place near Yaqub. Again, another collaborator, he was rewarded a prize from Hulako Khan. Of course, leaving the Muslim world, let's have a look at the Christian world, the Crusaders. They were, as we said, yani, overjoyed. Hulako understandably received most adulation in the Christian world. He was hailed, and his wife, Dutus Khatun, as we said, she was a Christian on an Nestorian path. They considered them the new Constantine and Helena. Constantine is the Roman Empire who spread Christianity through the Roman Empire. And they basically, they looked at as God's instruments for vengeance on the enemies of Christ, Muslims. In May 1260, when the Christian draftsmen drew the triumph of the cross was held by Constantine and Helena, but the features, the photos, the pictures were that of Hulako and Dutus Khatun. So, of course, the Christians were very much, as we said before, happy to see the Abbasi regime or Khilafah destroyed. The wife of Hulako, that's her name, Dutus Khatun, was already a devout Christian who hated Islam. 13th century Christian historian, when they talked about her, they basically praised her so much that someone said, she is the devout queen who loves Christ. Another said that she was a blessed woman and called her the Biko Khatun, who was good in every respect, very kind to all the poor and needy. So Muslims, for them, basically, it's a clear statement during that time to be massacred, to be killed, this is fine by the Crusaders and the Christian worlds. And that's why, like we said before, that part of history, you wouldn't see it much. The Christian church still holding so much, even what we've seen, from their own historians, not allowed to access the so-called evil place in Vatican to get more resources. The Armenians as well, of course, which they attacked the Turks every now and then, they took part in the massacre in Baghdad. So every now and then they come in the newspaper saying that the Turks killed the Armenians, but no one is talking about what they have done together with the Khorj or Georgia against those in Baghdad and other Muslim countries. He says that this woman, she was the best of all Christians, and she did not just rebuild churches that had been damaged, but also destroyed the masajids of the Muslims. And she reduced the Muslims to such a condition of servitude that they no longer dared show themselves. And we'll see even more humiliation in when Dimashq fell in the hands of the Mongols. Bilad al-Sham was basically very much inside for Hulagu Khan. Hulagu Khan now is building a new world, if you like. The Christian, or the alliance between him and the Christian worlds, were very much working. They destroyed the Khilafah, and this is a dream for the Crusaders. They have been in the area for over 200 years. They couldn't control much. But now we've got an alliance that actually destroyed the headquarters of those people. See, this is actually the end of Islam. And they started to have even more relationships so they can actually go further north, and they come down in Bilad al-Sham and then Egypt. And of course, as we said, that in North Africa and Spain, where basically the Christians are doing all the damage against al-Murabitin. The Muslims' Amir during that time, when they started to see the shift of power, they started to go and submit to the Mongols. So Badr al-Din Lu'lu', which is the Amir of Mosul, straight away went and he bowed down to the Mongols, acknowledged his power, and submitting to him and his little Imara, if you like, as total submission to the new leader. Those as well from the east and west of Turkey today, Amir Kekaos and Amir Kalja Arslan, they did the same thing. They went in and they submit themselves to Hulagu Khan. Amir of Homs, Al-Ashraf Al-Ayyubi, which is the grandchild of Salah ad-Din Al-Ayyubi alayhi rahmatullah. So we're looking here about 70 years after the death of Salah ad-Din. Total humiliation. Again, submitted himself to the Mongols. And Amir of Halab and Damascus, Al-Nasir Yusuf, which we will have a little bit more story about this strange character. And you will see the Al-Nasir Yusuf Al-Ayyubi, which is again another grandson of Salah ad-Din. He is very much of what we have today. He actually represents leadership that the Muslim worlds, and you will agree with me when we go through that very short explanation of what Al-Nasir Yusuf did with Hulagu Khan. But at this stage, he acknowledged the power of Hulagu Khan and he submitted to him, and if he could do anything to help him and please him. These names that I've said, north of Iraq, which is Mosul, and then we're going into Turkey, which is north of Bilad al-Sham, and then we've already got Homs, Halab, and Damascus. This is actually Bilad al-Sham. So Bilad al-Sham, based on what Hulagu's next step will be, is going to take this part. So we can see all the emirs are coming and submitting. So this will be actually not a war at all. He will just walk in and take over, and he will do whatever he wishes. This is the superpower. This is the man that makes the decision that pleases him, and we, of course, get to see him as a barbarian, like his grandfather, killing the Muslims. But one thing actually went against him, or if you like, against the norm. There was a little city, if you look at the map, called Miah Farqin, surrounded by Christian Armenians and Georgians in the north and in the east, Seljuk Muslims, and Halab Muslims, and the Mosuls Muslims. Now Muslims, which is what we talked about, Badr al-Din Lu'lu' of Mosuls, he is already submitting himself to Hulagu Khan. The Armenian, the Christians, and the Georgians were very happy with what's happening. And of course, when they heard that Al-Amir al-Kamil, Al-Ayyubi, wants to actually raise the flag of jihad, they contacted Hulagu, "We are with you to destroy that Amir in Miah Farqin." Al-Suljuk in Turkey and Al-Ayyubin in Bilad al-Sham as well were very much on the side of the new superpower. This man actually is bringing in somewhat we call uncharacteristic approach from Amir, because during that time most of the Umara or Salatin, they only wanted to live. They only wanted their power. They wanted to make sure that they keep their wealth. But this Al-Kamil is now going to disrupt the beast. "We don't want you to fight. What fighting? What jihad? Why don't you just submit and let's all live in peace and we get our own positions?" So that was abnormal, if you like, Amir, during that time. So he actually managed to be some sort of another jihad area against the Mongols, and alayhi rahmatullah, managed to keep Miah Farqin for 1.5 years. So they attacked him, as we will see, Mongols, for almost 1.5 years. But before they did that, Amir al-Kamil Muhammad alayhi rahmatullah decided to do what others refused to do, and that is to fight the Mongols. So what did Hulagu Khan did, alayhi min Allah ma astahak, he sent a messenger. And that messenger actually was a Christian Arab. His name came in the books, Qassis Ya'qubi. He went over to al-Kamil and he explained to him, what are you trying to do? Hulagu Khan is the superpower here. You've seen what happened to Baghdad. It was destroyed. Over 1 million were killed. Why do you want to do that to yourself and your people? Surrender. So the message was very clear. I am Arab, but I'm Christians. The Christians are behind Hulagu Khan. That's one. Two, surrender. Three, if you look at the map, everyone around you, basically, is not going to help you. You're all with Hulagu Khan. So you have no way out. What was Al-Kamil alayhi rahmatullah did to this messenger? He actually killed him. And killing a messenger, of course, Islamically, it's not acceptable. But of what he saw only a few months ago in Baghdad, and the massacre that took place, and fall of the seat of the Khilafah, led Al-Kamil to basically kill that priest. And he took his head and put it in one of the gates in Miafarqin. Hulagu, of course, straight away saw that the man is gone to fight. So he sent his own son with a huge army. Ashmut bin Ibn Hulagu was the leader of that army. And he surrounded Miafarqin, as I said, for almost 1.5 years. Which is a very long time. During that time, Amir Muhammad al-Kamil was trying to have any support from Amir of Halab, of Dimashq, of Homs. No one helped him. Food, medicine, men to fight. Sorry, we have a treaty with the shaitan and we cannot go against it. It's a new United Nation, if you like. Well, if you want anything, you have to go to the United Nations first before you ask us. Isn't that what they do today against the Muslim countries? And they basically put them under a boycott. You're not allowed to contact anyone. You are the aggressor. Why not? Actually, you are disturbing the peace. If you come and submit, then everything will be fine. You actually leading your people to destruction. He basically fought, alayhi rahmatullah, and the Mongols managed to destroy the castles after a long period of time, and they managed to capture Muhammad al-Kamil alive, alayhi rahmatullah, and they took him back to Hulagu Khan. And when he saw him, he basically crucified him and cut him into pieces, and he made him eat his own flesh. And when that finished, he took his head and put it in a stick to go around all of Bilad al-Sham as an example for anyone who stands against the power or the new superpower or the new world order, if you like, of that time. That was a story that basically was against the norm in that part of the world. Now, let's go back to this Amir al-Nasir al-Ayyubi. Let's have a look about this man. Al-Amir Nasir al-Ayyubi, which is a grandson to Salah ad-Din, he actually contacted Hulagu Khan to help him to invade Egypt. Egypt during that time was in the hands of the Mamalik. Sultan al-Kamil, another one, Saleh, died. And when Turan Shah tried to do a deal with the Christians, Louis IX, the Azahar Babers, alayhi rahmatullah, basically killed him with a group of Mamluki, and they now controlling Egypt. So Al-Nasir al-Ayyubi wanted to take back Egypt to be under the umbrella of Dawla al-Ayyubiyya as it was before. So who is he writing to? To the Mongols. Hulagu Khan, I want you to help me so we can actually take on Egypt. Of course, to do this, he sent his own son, Al-Aziz, who actually took part in the fight against Baghdad, against the Al-Musta'asim, and the Khalifa of Baghdad during that time. But what happened? Hulagu is not interested in someone telling him, come and help me, to take Egypt, and Egypt will be part of al-Nasr al-Ayyubi. I'm going to take Egypt, not you. I'm the one that actually said who should have what. So what did he do? He actually wrote a letter to him. And this letter was so much of a death, if you like, letter to al-Malik al-Nasr. Al-Malik al-Nasr, of course, this letter was written in Arabic, and it has Quran, and it has Shi'r, poem, and it has a hadith in Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Who do you think will write this? Those are, again, scholars that Hulagu Khan has got around him, who are actually Muslims, and they very much happy to write a letter to another Muslim in the best way to please the Mongol leader. He said, الَّذِي يَعْلَمُ بِهِ الْمَلِكُ النَّاصِرُ صَاحِبُ حَلَبُ. The al-Malik al-Nasir, the Amir of Halab, knows very well, إِنَّا قَدْ فَتَحْنَا بَغْدَادْ بِسَيْفِ اللَّهِ تَعَالَى. We conquered Baghdad with the sword of Allah. Allahu Akbar. Mangul Khan is talking here about Saifullah, alayhi la'natullah. وَقَتَلْنَا فُرْسَانِهَا. And we killed all soldiers. وَهَدَّمْنَا بُنْيَانِهَا وَأَصَرْنَا سُكَانِهَا. And we destroyed all the cities there, and we took their people. كَمَا قَالَ اللَّهُ تَعَالَى فِي كِتَابِهِ الْعَزِيزِ قَالَتْ إِنَّ الْمُلُوكَ إِذَا دَخَلُوا قَرْيَةً أَفْسَدُوهَا وَجَعَلُوا أَعِزَّةَ أَهْلِهَا أَذِلَّةً وَكَذَلِكَ يَفْعَلُونَ. He's making a reference here to what the Queen of Saba was saying about Sulaiman alayhi salatu wasalam when he asked her to submit. We better contact him and say, we are with you because we know if the kings come and attack Medina, they will destroy it. So he's making reference from the Quran to Al-Malik al-Nasir. وَاسْتَحْضَرْنَا خَلِيفَتْهَا. And we brought the Khalifa. What did we do? وَسَأَلْنَاهُ عَنْ كَلِمَاتٍ فَكَذِبْ. We asked him about his treasures and money, but he told us a lie. فَوَاقَعَهُ النَّدَمْ وَاسْتَوْجَبَ مِنَّا الْعَدَمْ. He basically regretted, but it was too late because we killed him. وَكَانَ قَدْ جَمَعَ زَخَائِرُ النَّفِيسَةِ وَكَانَتْ نَفْسَهُ خَسِيسَةً فَجَمَعَ الْمَالِ وَلَمْ يَعْبَأُ بِالرِّجَالِ. What happened to him? You know very well that he was killed. And then he said, إِذَا وَقَفْتُ عَلَىٰ كِتَابِي هَذَا. If you receive this book, this letter, فَسَارِعْ بِرِجَالِكَ وَأَمْوَالِكَ وَفُرْسَانِكَ إِلَىٰ طَاعَةِ سُلْطَانِ الْأَرْضِ. I want you to come in a hurry, yourself, your wealth, your soldiers, and submit to the Sultan of the land, the King of all kings. Otherwise, you will get exactly what the Khalifa had. Of course, al-Nasr didn't expect that. I'm your friend. I sent my son to fight with you against the Khalifa. And we have a very good relationship until you got Mi'a Farqin. We didn't actually stop the blockade. Why are you doing this to me? So what did he do? Al-Nasr al-Ayyubi, he decided to go into jihad. He said, I'm going to fight against the Mongols. Of course, jihad for someone like him, really, is nonsense. He, at one stage, wants to fight a Muslim country, not to help another Muslim country, and he actually supported and participated in a campaign against the downfall of the Khilafah, and now he wants to call his people for jihad against the Mongols, which is a huge joke. So he decided to fight. Remember, he's got two major cities. He's got Halab and Damascus, which is the base for Bani Umayyah. For 90 years, Khilafah Bani Umayyah ruled from Damascus. This man, alayhi min Allah ma'astahiq, was the Amir to these two places. So Hulagu, basically, when he started to hear that al-Nasr al-Ayyubi is going to mobilize an army to fight him, he didn't actually pay too much attention because he knew that this is not really the case. He's not serious. It's like what you have today from some of the emirs, the president or prime minister. They started to come up and attack the Christians, and they said the Jews and the Israels and all that, big shots. And they actually, all their life, were collaborators. But all of a sudden, when they got cornered, they started to say, jihad, let's go and fight the crusaders, and let's do this and let's do that, which is basically not very much. It's a big talk, but of course the enemy knows exactly who these people are. So here he was in Hamadan, in Iran today, and he's going now to head to Bilad al-Sham, and he will start from Al-Bira, which is in the land of As-Salajika, Muslim land, and he will go down to Halab, and from Halab to Homs, and from Homs to Dimashq. And basically, we will see, if we have a look at this map, that's going to be the case. All this will be in the hands in less than 2 years from the fall of Baghdad. When he actually went to Halab, the people of Halab started to mobilize themselves, and the Amir in that part basically started to galvanize the people to fight, but it didn't actually last too long. It's only 1 week until the Mongols managed to go into Halab and they started to massacre the people inside Halab. And then they went to Homs. Homs, as we said, Al-Kamil decided to go into jihad. But what did he do actually? He took his army, and instead of meeting them in Homs, he took his army down south, 300 k's to Damascus. So this is another way of running away. It is no jihad there, basically. And what did he do? He had what we call a meeting with his advisors. One of those advisors, Amir, or the head of his ministers, by the name of Zain al-Din al-Hafizi. Zain al-Din al-Hafizi, alayhi min Allah ma istahaq, started to tell him that we are no match to the Mongols. The best thing for us to do is to surrender. We should not actually do anything to the Mongols. And Nasir Yusuf likes what he was hearing. Part of the people that were actually attending this meeting was Az-Zahir Babers, which we will talk about him more, inshallah, next week. He was a Mamluki from Egypt, Al-Bahriya, which is one of the major group of the Mamluki that ruled Egypt. He basically was so much against what Zain al-Din al-Hafizi was saying, and he started actually to attack him. Some said that he physically stood up and abused him and hit him as well. And out of that, the Al-Nasir, who was actually siding with his wazir, Zain al-Din al-Hafizi, he took a stand against Az-Zahir Babers, and they were about to basically round him up and kill him, but he managed to leave Bilad al-Sham, and he went down to Egypt, and he contacted the head of Egypt during that time, another Mamluki, by the name of Sultan Qutuz. And Sultan Qutuz, despite the fact that they were enemy at one stage of their life, he accepted him, knowing him as a great leader, and as well, he needed him for his preparation for war against the Mongols. So Zahir Babers left to Egypt, and he left Damascus. When Halab basically fell in the hands of the Mongols, it took him about 7 days, Halaku alayhi min Allah ma istahaq, give the orders basically not to touch the Christian population and their palaces of worship, and he destroyed all the masajid and the fortress in that place. And he at that stage rewarded the Christian allies with him by giving one of the crusaders, Al-Lazqiyya, one of the cities in Bilad al-Sham. And Hamat, another city, when they saw what was happening, they decided to surrender to Hulaku. And Damascus, of course, was his next step. And as I said, Al-Nasir Yusuf and his wazir decided not to fight, despite of what Az-Zahir Babers was telling them. But their outcome of this meeting is to flee the country. To flee the country altogether. So Damascus has to stand up and fight without the army. We've seen that in Muhammad Khawarizm Shah, when the garrison left Bukhara and they basically couldn't stay to defend the country. And the Mongols, of course, went in and destroyed the whole of Bukhara. The Damascus, they actually, when they saw the situation was going against them, they decided to surrender. They decided to surrender. Their good luck during that time is the great Khan, Mangul Khan, who rules this huge empire from Karakoram, died. And Hulaku Khan had to go back to be part of the party, who are going to choose the new Khan. But Damascus, Halab, and all that part of Bilad al-Sham fell in the hands of the Mongols by 1260, which is only 2 years after the fall of Baghdad. We're talking here about January, February, March, around that time. The first time since Heracles left the city, this is the time of Khalid ibn al-Walid radiallahu anhu wa ardah, Abu Ubaidah Amr ibn al-Jarrah and Mu'az ibn Jabal, when they took Bilad al-Sham from the Romans. Since that time, no Christians actually approached these cities. And now we can see that the cities had a huge army, the Mongols. Despite it was a Mongols army, but they had three Christian generals going through the roads of Damascus. Bohemian, who was basically one of the crusaders, and as the history said, his father-in-law is the king of Armenians, another shoot of the Christians, had convinced him to join with the Mongols, had mass sung in the masjid of Bani Umayyah, which is one of the biggest masjid in Damascus today. The other masajid he had defilled by his donkeys, so they went in and they started to do exactly what Genghis Khan did in Bukhara and Samarkand. They had the wine was scattered all over the place with grease of fresh pork and salt and experiment of his men. The Christian population of the city had the bell rang, went in processions through the city, drank wine publicly during Ramadan, insulted and humiliated the Muslims in that part. They went to Nablus in Lebanon, and of course they put their garrison to the sword. Let me just read to you what Ibn Kathir alayhi rahmatullah explained to us what was taking place in that part of the world. He said, Ibn Kathir, Ishtama'a Ibn Siyan, la'anahullah, the governor, the new governor of Damascus, even though he was not a Christian, he was from the Mongols. He basically had a meeting with all the priests and the Christian establishment, and he put them in a very high ranking comparing to the Muslims' equivalent. And he visited all their churches, so they became so influential and strong in the city. Some of those went to Hulako in Tabriz, and they took with them presents and, of course, submitted to him. And when they came back, they went through the gates of Toma, in one of the gates of Damascus. And this is the dreams of the Christians today, to have that part. This is where Yahya alayhi salam is born. And the previous pope actually did it for the first time in history, since the crusade were kicked out. And he went into Syria, and he was so taken by the whole experience going through that gate of Toma. And with them they had the big cross, of course. And يقول ابن كثير يحملونه على رؤوس الناس وهم ينادون بشعارهم ويقولون ظهر الدين الصحيح دين المسيح. They started to have the cross going out in the city, chanting, then the correct religion now victorious, the religion of المسيح عيسى عليه وعلى نبينا محمد أفضل الصلاة والتسليم. And then ابن كثير went on saying, وَيُزَمُّونَ دِينَ الْإِسْلَامِ وَأَهْلِهِ, and they started to attack Islam and its people. وَمَعَهُمْ أَوَانِي فِيهَا خَمْرٍ, and they have big pots with wine. لَا يَمُرُّونَ عَلَى بَابِ مَسْجِدٍ إِلَّا رَشُّوا عِنْدَهُ خَمْرًا. Every time they will pass a masjid, they will take some of this wine and they will throw it in the masjid. وَقَمَائِمْ مَلْآنَةُ خَمْرًا يُرَشُّونَ مِنْهَا عَلَى وُجُوهِ النَّاسِ وَثِيَابِهِمْ. And they will see the Muslims standing. This is minority living in a Muslim country. For hundreds of years, they will take the wine and they will throw it on a Muslim in their clothes and so forth. And of course, they will وَيَأْمُرُونَ كُلُّ مَنْ يَجْتَازُونَ بِهِ فِي الْأَزِقَّةِ وَالْأَسْوَاقِ أَنْ يَقُومْ لِصَلِيبِهِمْ. And as they going with the cross around the cities and the alleys, they will compel the Muslim to stand up for the cross. Again, a humiliation to them. ووقف خطيبهم إلى دكة دكان في عطفة السوق فمدح دين النصارى وذم دين الإسلام وأهله فإنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون. They will stand up and they will make a khutbah, big speech, to glorify their religion, attack Islam and the Muslims, and as Ibn Kathir said, فَإِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. And then they would go into the big masjid. Some of the qudā of the Muslims had a meeting, and they went to the new governor complaining about the Christians and what they do to their places of worship and the population. This man actually dismissed them, kicked them out, and sat on the side of the Christians. Of course, now we've got the Mongols in Baghdad, Damascus, Aleppo, all fell in the hands of Christians. The Mongols basically said that, a Christian historian was making a note saying, this is the end of Islam, or the end of Islam had arrived. And that's what they dream of until today, that they will always see Islam is for them a prize to destroy it. Alayhim min Allah ma yastahiqun. Only Egypt was left for the Christian Mongols alliance to finish Islam, and Hulaku alayhi min Allah ma yastahiq was determined to make an end of Islam. He sent an embassy of 40 people to Cairo with a letter which stated, this is now letter going from Palestine, which is only a few kilometers from Egypt. This letter in it saying, God had raised the house of Genghis Khan alayhi la'natullah, and whoever has resisted has been wiped out. Our armies are invincible. If you don't submit and do not bring tribute in person to my camp, prepare for war. This is the chilling message that will arrive in Egypt, and Sultan Qutuz alayhi rahmatullah and the Mamluki and the Egyptians in that place will have to make a decision. The Mongols are very close. They saw what the Mongols did in the Muslim lands, the massacres and the killing. They knew what they have done in Europe. There's no match to them till this stage. Of course, the message has to be decisive, either to go to war or to submit. Inshallah, next week we will see what Qutuz will do and his message to the Mongols. This is a brief. At Ain Jalud on the 3rd of September in the same year, the Mamluk and the Mongols army fought one of the world's most decisive battles. Once they came in contact with the Mongols army, Qutuz alayhi rahmatullah, the head of the Muslim army, reminded his generals of the many Muslims population that have been slaughtered by the Mongols, that they must free Syria and save Islam, and that if they failed in their duty, God would inflict his retribution. The generals were in tears and vowed to do their utmost to defeat the enemy. As the fighting began, Qutuz alayhi rahmatullah shouted, O God, give your servant Qutuz victory over the Mongols. Inshallah, we'll have a look at him and his character and the place where the battle took place in Ain Jalut. Actually, it didn't happen in Egypt. It didn't happen in Egypt. He took the war to the Mongols, which is actually totally different to what all the other emirs and all the other sultan did. They waited for them to come and they'll fight from the fortress. But Qutuz, remember that Qutuz has a relationship with Khwarizm, with the Dawla Khwarizm, Muhammad Khwarizm Shah. And Az-Zahir Babers was one of those who suffered on the hands of the Mongols. He was actually captured as a young boy and who was sold as a slave. So we're looking here at 1260, and the Mongols came to the Muslim land in 1216. This is now almost over 40 years, so it's a new generation that Qutuz and Babers will start to take on those Mongols and basically will turn the tide for the first time in the history that actually helped not only the Muslim world but as well the Crusaders, because there was no end to the expansion of the Mongols. Once they finished with the Muslim Ummah, they definitely will go up north. They've got Russia, they've got all the Eastern Europe, Poland, Hungary, Hungary today, and of course they were just on the gates of Austria. So inshallah, next week we'll have a look at that, and that could be actually the end of a part of our history, the history of the Mongols, and inshallah we'll see what the scholars actually made out of that. I just want you to remember that Al-Imam and the scholar Ibn Taymiyyah was born during that time. So if you ever come across his writings, you need to put it into perspective, because he saw Islam during that time was destroyed and millions were basically killing from the West, the Crusaders, and from the East, which is the Mongols. So his writing is very strong, and you will find it actually reflect the time and the turmoil that the Muslim world were going through, and his fatawa is very strong and very decisive as well. وصلى الله على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم.